Welcome to Watchmen on the Wall, a daily outreach of Southwest Radio Ministries and SWRC.com. God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. Today, we'll learn how to answer those who say the Bible is full of errors and contradictions with author and teacher Jason Lyle. I hope you and your family are making plans to join us this summer for the Mysteries of the Bible Verse event, June 7th and 8th in the Cincinnati area. The lineup of speakers is amazing, and the topics covered will be out of this world. Derek Gilbert, Rudy Landa, Michael Hoggard, Micah Van Hus, and many others. So don't miss the premier event of 2024. For a complete listing of speakers and topics, and a link to special hotel rates, visit the events page of our website, swrc.com. Giants, UFOs, dragons, demons, secret societies. Topics your Sunday school teacher didn't talk about. Mysteries of the Bible Verse, June 7th and 8th. Registration is now open with a limited number of VIP packages still available. Visit the events page of our website, swrc.com, and register today. You can also register by calling 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Mysteries of the Bible Verse, June 7th and 8th in Cincinnati. You can't trust the Bible. It's full of hundreds of contradictions. Well, that's what we hear from the world, at least. How do we respond? Clayton Van Hus and author Jason Lyle are here to help us answer those who say the Bible is full of errors and contradictions.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host today, Clayton Van Hus, and we're so glad you've joined us for Watchmen on the Wall. Today, we have a very special guest we're excited to talk to. It's someone you've probably heard before, maybe even been to some lectures, and you've certainly seen some of his work. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jason Lyle. Dr. Lyle is an astrophysicist, and he is involved with many different ministries. Dr. Lyle, thank you. We welcome you to the program.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you're quite welcome. All right, you're an astrophysicist. What is that?
Well, it's the study of everything beyond Earth, really. It's a pretty broad field. We study the universe, stars, galaxies, black holes, anything. So my specialty is in solar astrophysics. I got my PhD working on the basically weather on the sun. So that was kind of an interesting thing to do.
That is. So with astrophysics, you're dealing with things. I see that you were a double major in physics and astronomy with your undergrad. That sounds like some pretty heavy stuff.
It is, but I enjoy it. I just, there's something about the universe. I mean, it declares God's glory. There's something that just captured my imagination since I was very, very young. And I love working with that stuff. And physics is about how things work. And I like to know how things work. It's just something that the Lord put in me to explore and enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting that God gave us a universe that has rules. There are laws, there are the way that things work. And all scientists, whether they're Christians, whether they're skeptics, they're going to have to follow those rules. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe how those rules point to a creator?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are laws and there's going to be a lawgiver. The universe obeys mathematical laws. Mathematics is really how God thinks about numbers. If you think about it, that's really what it is. Numbers are abstract. They exist in the mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can talk about one or two oranges, but the one or two, that's conceptual. The oranges are physical, but the number that represents quantity is abstract. It exists in the mind. Now, why is it that the universe, which is physical, obeys mental abstractions like mathematics? Now, I, as a Christian, can make sense of that because I would argue that mathematics is the way God thinks about numbers, and it's God's mind that is controlling the universe. So, of course, the universe will obey math. But secularists can't really make sense of that. They all take it for granted. They all believe that E equals MC squared and F equals MA, that the universe obeys these mathematical formulae, but they can't account for it on their secular worldview. In fact, there was a Nobel Prize-winning physicist, Eugene Wigner, who wrote a wonderful article on the unreasonable effectiveness of mathematics in the natural sciences, where he tries to discover why is it that the universe, which is physical, obeys mental abstractions like math, and from his secular worldview, he couldn't answer it. Now, the guy's bright. He's a Nobel-winning physicist, Nobel Prize-winning physicist, But he couldn't answer from a non-Christian worldview why the universe obeys math, whereas every Christian can. We could say that's what we'd expect because we have a God who's communicated to us, who has made us in his image, and so we can think mathematically, and it's that God that upholds the universe. So the universe obeys laws because we live in a biblical universe where God controls that universe by his mind.
Yeah, that is amazing that we can use our reason. We can be rational to understand the foundations of the universe that were put in place by God. So you have worked with a number of different ministries that people are familiar with, Answers in Genesis, the Institute for Creation Research, but you are also the founder of the Biblical Science Institute. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how we can find you online?
Yeah, so the website, it's just the name, biblicalscienceinstitute.com. And what we're doing is we're showing how science confirms the Christian worldview. Of course, there are other fine ministries that do that. I had the privilege of working with Answers in Genesis for many years, but I kind of wanted to expand out and go beyond just creation, which I still defend. I still defend Genesis and the literal history of Genesis, but I also wanted to expand out and show how science in the present confirms what the Bible teaches in various fields, in astronomy, and which, of course, that's my specialty field, but also in things like quantum physics and how these things confirm what the Bible teaches. And I try to do it on multiple levels, but the main level I'm trying to reach is people that don't really have a lot of a background in science, but they want to be able to articulate and defend the Christian faith well and talk about some of these basic things in science. And so I try to write on that level. And then I have a few articles that are a little more detailed for the science groupies out there.
Right. And that is so important right now because I think as a society, we've put this dichotomy out there. You can either be a man of faith or you can be a man of science. And I think you can be a man of reason and bring them together. Are they mutually exclusive from one another?
On the contrary, what I try to show people is that this myth, we've all heard the narrative, as you pointed out, we've all heard this narrative that you can't be scientific and a Christian. What I try to do is show people you can't really be consistently scientific without being a Christian. And that's because it's the scientific method, the idea of probing the universe, because there's consistency, there's laws in nature. That only makes sense in a biblical worldview where God upholds nature in a consistent way. And that's why, as just a matter of historical fact, most of the founding fathers of the various disciplines of science were Christians. They expected to find patterns in nature because they believed nature was upheld by the mind of God and that God is orderly and rational. And that he's made us in his image, and thus we can discover some of these patterns in nature. What I try to show people is that the exact opposite of the narrative is true. If you want to consistently be a good scientist and have reasons for why science is possible, you really have to be a consistent Christian. Now, that's not to say that secularists can't do science. They can, but they're doing it inconsistently. They're tacitly assuming that there's a God who's upholding things in a consistent fashion, while then verbally denying that God. You see, sure. And that's what the Bible speaks of in Romans 1 when it says that God's revealed himself against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. Everyone knows God, but most people suppress that God in their heart of hearts. They don't want to know God. They work very hard to convince themselves and others that they don't know God.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up that passage of Romans 1 because that's, of course, one of the places that we find our word apologia is used there, that they do not have a case when they deny
God. Right,
they're
without an excuse. It's literally without an apologetic or without a defense.
Yeah.
And that's how I try to do apologetics, is by recognizing that unbelievers don't have one.
Yeah, it's amazing. You've obviously done a lot of work. You're an author. You've done some best-selling books. If people have been to the Creation Museum, they've probably seen your works there at the planetarium shows. But
yes.
I've got a list of books that are well-known. They're great resources for the Christian layperson. We've got like The Ultimate Proof of Creation, The Stargazer's Guide to the Night Sky. I have your Logic and Faith Pocket Guide from Answers in Genesis.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're going to be talking today about your book, Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason, about refuting alleged Bible contradictions. This is a scary subject.
It is, but once you study it, once you really get into it, that fear, I think, dissipates because we do have a self-consistent word of God, and it's not going to contradict itself because God is self-consistent. It's just a matter of, can I on the spot refute somebody who claims to have found a contradiction. That's what makes it a little bit scary, because we're all finite and we all make mistakes. But that's what I wanted the book to be helpful with, as a resource for someone who comes across someone who claims that the Bible has a contradiction.
Absolutely. I know when you come across an argument that you're not sure how to answer at first, it can be very scary. I've learned, though, when that happens, you take the hardest argument first, and if you can knock that one down, the rest of them, they fall in short order. So what Yes. is, if we're going to talk about the alleged Bible contradictions, what is something that someone would call a contradiction? What is that?
Well, yeah, an actual contradiction is when you make two statements that cannot both be true at the same time, that one is necessarily false if the other is true. And so the way to put it is, if I say A and not A at the same time in the same sense, that's a contradiction. If I said my car's in the parking lot and it's not the case that my car's in the parking lot, and I mean, you know, I'm referring to the same car and so on at the same time, that would be a contradiction. Mm-hmm. And that can't be true. You can't have A and not A at the same time in the same sense. And people make claims that the Bible contains contradictions and therefore it has to be at least partly false. And you can see why they would try to make that claim. They would try to refute Christianity that way.
Sure.
But what I've found is, and the reason for the book is, there was a list floating around the internet of 400 alleged Bible contradictions. And I thought, come on, this is silly. And so I thought, I just went through that list one by one, and every claim that was made in that list is answered in this book. So that's why it's got over 400 answers to alleged contradictions, because, and most of the time, it's just people not reading the text carefully. Or they'll say, you'll get two different reports from different people, and the reports differ, but they're not contradictory. If somebody saw a car go by, and one person said, that car is really fast, and another person said, that car was red, that's not a contradiction, because a car can be both fast and red. So differences are not necessarily contradictions. A contradiction is A and not A at the same time in the same sense. And I contend the Bible has no genuine contradiction in anything that it affirms.
Right. Anytime that I've looked into them, they just melt. And that's one thing, yeah, I really like about your book, the way that it's formatted. You've got these supposed contradictions, and you put them in bold, and then you answer them. And they're numbered. But I've noticed that the first thing you do in your answers is you give what kind of a fallacy is behind the claim. Can you explain, yeah, to us what a fallacy is and what some of the more common ones that we'll run into are?
Sure. A fallacy is a mistake in reasoning, an error in logic. And there are a number of these fallacies, and I've written books on that as well. I think it's helpful for people to know something about fallacies so you won't be fooled by them. One example of a fallacy is an equivocation fallacy, and that's where people change the meaning of a word in the middle of an argument. For example, James 1:13 teaches that God cannot be tempted, but Hebrews 4:15 teaches that Jesus, who is God, was tempted in all things. That's a contradiction. No, because the meaning of the word tempted is different, mm-hmm, in those two passages. In James 1:13, when it means God can't be tempted, it means he can't be enticed. Tempted can mean enticed, like you want to do something, whereas it can also mean tested. Now, Jesus was tested in all things, but he was never enticed. He never gave in to that. He never wanted to sin. And so that's an example of an equivocation fallacy. Or we have the bifurcation fallacy. The bifurcation fallacy, that's the one that I just gave. If somebody says a car is fast, another person says the car is red, oh, that's a contradiction. No, it's not, because a car can be both fast and red. When somebody says, no, either this or that, either the car is fast or it's red, but it can't be both, that's a bifurcation fallacy, because in fact it can be both. So bifurcation fallacy is basically where you give people a multiple choice test and the right answer is not there. You, yeah, say either A or B, and you're like, no, it's C, all of the above, right?
Sure.
So we need to remember that life is not multiple choice. You can write in the correct answer. Those are two just quick examples of logical fallacies. And a lot of the alleged contradictions are resolved when you realize the person making the claim has committed a logical fallacy.
Right. I see that. And I see a lot of these where it's just simple things like a failure to read the text carefully, taking things out of context. So,
yeah,
as far as the way this book is laid out, some of the answers are longer than others. They'll take up a page, page and a half, that sort of thing. But most of them, you have very simple answers. They're about a paragraph in length or so.
Yeah.
Is it because so many of the accusations are just simple misunderstandings? What's going on there?
Yeah, and then towards the end of the book, I kind of tallied up the mistakes that the critics had made in making these errors, and the most common mistake was simply a failure to read the text carefully or in context. That was by far the most common mistake, where they're just pulling it out of context. They're not being fair to the author, and there are lots of examples of that. Bifurcation was the second most common, where you say either A or B, when in fact it can be both or it can be neither. There's a third option. The third most common was the equivocation fallacy. So, yeah, these are just common mistakes in reasoning, and that's why a lot of the answers didn't need to be very long. And sometimes, if a person makes a mistake that I've covered earlier in more detail, I'll just kind of say, it's this mistake, take a look back at this example. That way I don't have to rewrite the entire answer. It's the same kind of error. So that's one thing that kind of kept the book short. You can read it in a day, really. Oh, yeah. It's not that long. And yet it's a nice book to have on your shelf as a reference in case somebody comes up. Because, again, there's over 400 in the book. And so if somebody comes up with an alleged contradiction, the answer is probably in this book.
Oh, yeah. I've seen so many in here. This book's definitely going on my shelf after the interview. It's been sitting on my desk, and I've been looking at it and reading through it. I love how you turn the tables in this book. I don't want to give away all the spoilers, but towards the end, when you say that rather than listing 420 genuine contradictions in Scripture, that the critic has actually given 420 examples of his own incompetence, the lack of comprehension. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and that's what it has to be that way. It's not like God's going to make any genuine mistakes in his book. So it's just a question of human beings. Anytime a human being challenges God, that's not going to end well for the human being.
Right. So here's a question. We've been talking about this book, and there's all sorts of valuable information, a lot of reasoning. Is this the sort of book that your basic Christian can understand, like a layperson who has not been to seminary, has not delved deeply into deep studies? Is it easy for anybody to understand, or is this something I need to study to read?
Oh, no, I think it's very easy to read. I intended it to be written on a layman level. I presume no background knowledge of the reader. And in cases where background knowledge is required, I supply it. Okay, here's what it... Because there are a very few, where I had to go back and look at the original languages. I had to go back and look at the Hebrew and Greek. And when those happen, I explain them. I say, okay, here's what the word is in Hebrew. And you can see why the critic who's not fluent in Hebrew would have made that mistake. But it is a mistake. So there are very few places where that happens. In most cases, the critic just hasn't read the text carefully, and I draw that out. And I'll say, okay, here's why he drew that conclusion, but you can see reading the text, here's what it actually means, and so on. Yeah, it doesn't require any previous knowledge of the Bible or of logic, really. In the introduction to the book, I actually give some of the more common logical fallacies. So even if you don't know anything about logical fallacies, that's explained in the first part of the book, and what a contradiction is, and so on. So you can have very little knowledge and still read the book, and I think be well prepared when the critic comes and claims that there are these alleged contradictions.
Let me ask you a question. Was there any contradiction you came across, supposed contradiction, that had you stumped a bit?
No, but there were some where I had to do a little bit of homework, where I had to go back and read the text carefully. Sometimes a particular English translation doesn't do a particularly good job. You know, or it'll add some words to the text for clarity. They're not trying to change the text. They're just things in Hebrew are stated differently than in English. You have to add some words there sometimes to make it sound right in English, just for grammatical. The grammar's different. And so there were a few places, and I'd say less than 5%, where I had to go back to the original language. I find that fun. I find that enjoyable. You know, I like researching things. Then once I went back to the original language, I'm like, oh, here's what's happening. Here's what's going on there. And then there are a few places, too, where there are textual issues, where people are distraught to learn this, but there are what are called textual variants in the Bible, where you'll find ancient manuscripts, and there's slight differences. And they're very slight. Sometimes when those get translated into English, then it causes some apparent contradictions, but they're not there in the original. And so there were a few places where I had to look at it's called textual criticism. And that's something I find enjoyable as well. So I learned some new things in researching these. Again, those were relatively few. Most of the alleged contradictions were people simply not reading the text carefully. And that really shows you that the critic is not trying to get at truth. He's trying to suppress the truth and unrighteousness.
Yeah, oftentimes there's that ulterior motive. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left. We've got a little over a minute. Let me ask you, what should I do if I come across something, if I'm presented with a supposed contradiction that I don't have an answer to. What do you recommend for me to do as a layperson?
Research and return. I think it's perfectly fair to say, well, friend, I don't know the answer to that right off the top of my head. Could I get back with you on that? There's nothing shameful about that. We're finite beings. We don't know everything. And anyone who doesn't accept that is clearly not interested in rational dialogue.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Dr. Jason Lyle, the book is Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason. Dr. Lyle, thank you once again for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me on.
All right. Thank you.
The world boldly states that you can't trust the Bible. Really? Just because the critic mindlessly declares it so? Don't be so fast to believe everything you hear. Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason by Jason Lyle is a book that examines 420 claims of Bible contradictions and sets the record straight. This book will prepare you to answer the critics who say the Bible isn't true and can't be trusted. Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason by Jason Lyle. Order your copy today when you call 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Or you can order on our website, swrc.com. Refuting Alleged Bible Contradictions. Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason by Jason Lyle. 1-800-652-1144. Are UFOs real? What about the sightings that are reported? Pastor and author Michael Hoggard will be presenting on these topics at our upcoming Mysteries of the Bible Verse event, June 7th and 8th in Cincinnati. With a preview of these fascinating topics, here's Micah Van Hus and Derek Gilbert.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Micah Van Hus. I am the producer of Marginal Mysteries for Southwest Radio Ministries. And today I have with us one of our speakers from the Mysteries of the Bible Verse event, Derek Gilbert. How are you doing today, Derek?
Doing very well, thank you. Look forward to the conference.
Awesome. We're going to have a good time. We're going to honor God. Folks ask, and it's a very valid question. When we talk about the mysteries and the things in the margins, why should people come to the Mysteries of the Bible Verse? Why should they know about the topics we're going to talk about? I'm going to ask your answer. I'll give my quick opinion. Well, first of all, Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be at the coming of the Son of Man. He also says to be ready for his return. So I think in order to be ready for his return, I think it's wise to know what was going on in the days of Noah. And that leads us into some of the mysterious topics, Genesis chapter 6, that Scripture talks about. I also think that if God chose to include something in his word, that it is worthy of study. Derek, why is it important that we know about these, that we talk about these mysterious things?
That's an important question because a lot of people will come to us and say, why do you focus on these weird things like giants and UFOs and stuff? I mean, shouldn't this just all be about Jesus? And the answer is yes, this is all about Jesus. His mission was much broader and much more exciting from a narrative standpoint than what most of us have been taught. But most of us think, okay, he's come to save us from sin, and that's fine. But we all have a tendency to think of ourselves as like the hero in the movie that's playing in our heads. You know, I'm not that bad a person. I'm certainly better than that guy over there, even though we know that we're not supposed to be that way. We kind of are. But the fact is, there are evil intelligences, evil spirit beings, not just demons, but fallen angels who are still active in the world today. And they've been active working against God and his creation since the garden. And when we start digging into the Scriptures, we see that in the original Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek, this battle is clearly in there. The prophets knew it. The apostles knew it. The early church fathers knew it. They knew where demons came from and what they were capable of. They knew that the religions of their pagan neighbors, that the gods of Greece and Rome and Egypt and Canaan were literal entities. We've lost that. And so we're on the battlefield and we're completely unprepared because we think that the gods of the ancient world were just the imaginary friends of the Romans and the Greeks. That's not what the early church believed. That's not what the apostles believed or the Hebrew prophets believed. Let's get back to understanding the world the way they understood it. Maybe we'll have a little better understanding of why things are in the world the way they are.
You're listening to Derek Gilbert and Micah Van Hus. We will both be speaking less than a month away at the Mysteries of the Bible Verse event in Cincinnati, Ohio, on June 7th and 8th. You can register at marginalmysteries.com, marginalmysteries.com. You can call Southwest Radio Ministries to reserve your ticket, 800-652-1144, 800-652-1144. 1144. Accompanied children 12 and under are free. What two topics are you going to be speaking on at the Mysteries of the Bible Verse?
Well, very briefly, I'll be explaining why the concept of giants is not just a fringe topic, but it's really central to understanding Christian theology. It really gets to the heart of what physical resurrection is all about. And Paul made it very clear in 1 Corinthians 15 that that is central to Christian theology. The giants are a key part of that. I'll also be talking about Lucifer and why Lucifer is not Satan, but is in fact another entity that is mentioned in Scripture who perhaps is more dangerous because he's locked up in chains in the abyss, the bottomless pit, whereas Satan is still roaming the earth.
I'm going to tell the folks what I'm going to be talking about, and then I want you to tell us how we can get a hold of you after I'm done with that. So I will be speaking on Friday on my book and presentation, The Earth As It Was, where I talk about my biblically based speculation on what I believe the earth was like before the flood of Noah. Then Saturday, I will be speaking, giving my presentation, Secret Societies, my latest book, my take on where the secret societies originated, how it relates to the knowledge of the Watchers, how it relates to the fallen princes of the air. So those are the topics I'm going to be speaking about at the Mysteries of the Bible Verse event. Derek, how can folks get a hold of you?
They can follow Sharon and me at gilberthouse.org, Gilbert House, one word, gilberthouse.org.
Come on out to the Mysteries of the Bible Verse event. That is Cincinnati, Ohio, June 7th and 8th. We're less than a month away now. You can register at marginalmysteries.com, or you can call Southwest Radio Ministries at 800-652-1144. We have other people speaking, including Rudy Landa. He's a filmmaker. We have Michael Hoggard, the UFO pastor, speaking. Greg Patton will be speaking. Mac Dominic, Josh Davis, and Derek Gilbert and myself. So, Derek, I appreciate you being with us today.
It's been an honor. Look forward to meeting you in person.
Mysteries of the Bible Verse, June 7th and 8th in the Cincinnati area. The lineup of speakers is amazing, and the topics covered will be out of this world. Derek Gilbert will be there, Rudy Landa, Michael Hoggard, Micah Van Hus, and many, many others. Don't miss the premier event of 2024. For a complete listing of speakers and topics, and a link to special hotel rates, visit the events page of our website, swrc.com. The world boldly states that you can't trust the Bible. They say it's full of hundreds of contradictions. Really? Just because the critic mindlessly declares it so? Don't be so fast to believe everything you hear. Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason by Jason Lyle is a book that examines 420 claims of Bible contradictions, and it sets the record straight. Keeping Faith in an Age of Reason by Jason Lyle. Order your copy today when you call 1-800-652-1144. Tomorrow, we debut Dr. Larry Spargimino's brand new book, The Abraham Proclamation. Be sure to tune in on your favorite radio station by downloading our SWRC mobile app or by listening at pray.com. Watchman on the Wall is a production of Southwest Radio Ministries and is supported by faithful listeners like you. Visit swrc.com.